This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome for another episode to another episode. Today, we are recording episode 199, I believe, if the math is correct and the count is correct in my mind. Today, I have the distinct pleasure and honor to have with me John Ray, and we'll get to know John in a bit here. We'll ask him the famous question on the channel, what we start the conversation with. But I want to thank everybody for joining me today on this journey of this particular episode. It's an interesting one. John, I've done a lot of research on you. I've done a lot of background work. You're a very interesting individual. I can't wait to get to know you. I can't wait to get to know what you do. And hopefully throughout the conversations today, we can shed some light on your story to our audience. So I appreciate you being with me, John.
Hey, I'm grateful to have the invitation to be with you. And I feel like I know you already, Robin. I've listened to your show and you do such wonderful work. So thank you.
Thank you so much for the compliment. This is coming from you, and you're a podcaster yourself. Well, you mentioned earlier 1,400 podcasts. I've got a big mountain to climb to get to that number, but at least I'm climbing. I'm not stopping.
Yep. That's all that matters. That's all that matters. Yep.
John, as we say on this channel, everybody has got a story. Why don't we start with this one? What is your story, John? What got you here?
Wow. My story is getting laid off after a long career in finance and dealing with lots of zeros and lots of larger transactions, companies, complexity, opening my own business and falling into the ditch, realizing that I didn't know how to price what I did and I didn't know how to price my expertise. And so I've got all the t-shirts in the drawer about this and I know where it comes from and some of the mindsets that create this problem. And that's got me passionate about this work because there are a lot of people out there that come out of corporate or they go out on their own and you're trying to sell your expertise. And there's a lot of help in things like marketing and accounting and other aspects of running a business, but not a whole lot about how to understand your value and lean into that value and price to that value.
You know, that's such an important topic. And, if you look around and, as of late last year, fall last year, I left my corporate job after 25 years in the business. And I ventured on my own. I started a small company called N49 Network, primarily as a consulting firm. And, I don't know if it's, when I looked around and said, so let's understand this whole consulting business. Now we call it fractional work. We can call it any title, to be honest with you. It seems to be taken off. Like there's a big economy out there. I mean, people label it gig economy, whatever you want to call it. But you're right. There's a substantial amount of people that they're getting into their 50s and how it is in corporate America. Same thing in corporate Canada. I'm in Toronto. When you reach a certain age, I guess large corporation, they try to do this. I don't know if they do it on purpose or part of the corporate, method of operation or the book, the manual, user manual. When you get to a certain age, I guess they find a way out for you and they replace you for the younger ones. I guess that's the sentiment that is out there. I'm sure it's not true. And I'm sure probably there's many exceptions to this. The point is when you get to a certain seniority level, and I face that, you start to think what I do is easy. I can do this. I've done it for 25 years. So whatever you're asking me to do, it's a second nature to me. So because I sense it, it's easy to do, and I've built a lot of expertise over the years, I'm having a hard time pricing it. And this is not just my own problem. I mean, a lot of people I talk to on the podcast and outside the podcast, they are faced with the same thing. Mm-hmm. Whatever your profession is, whatever your skill is, you've honed that skill for many, many years, John, and I'm sure you can attest to that. And mm-hmm. It becomes a second nature to you. So for somebody to say, well, it's going to cost you $10,000 to speak to me for 2 days. Somebody would say, well, no, there's too much money. Or am I pricing it accordingly? Or am I pricing it too low? I have no idea how to go with this one. I can't wait to hear your take on this one.
Well, yeah, there are a couple things there that I would love to chat with you about. One is just coming out of corporate, because that gives us a false sense of security. First of all, that gets shattered when we get displaced, laid off. By the way, I do think it's a strategy for some companies, not all, but some, to lower their cost and get, less expensive employees. So if that thought has not crossed your mind, you're listening to this show, think about it and get serious. That's a warning from both John and Robin.
That's right. But we've got a t-shirt, right, John?
That's right. Now, that's just one of the many t-shirts I have in my drawer. Another t-shirt I have in my drawer is coming out of corporate and realizing quickly that nobody that you meet out there after you started your business gives a hoot about where you came from. They could care less. Being in corporate does not prepare you to understand the vagaries of small, medium-sized businesses. It's just a totally different mindset, and the business owners that run these companies are different, and I think in a lot of cases different in a real good way, but they have their own unique issues, and they don't respond to the same thing that the folks that you dealt with in corporate respond to. And certainly, if your identity is tied up in where you were, and that's true for a lot of us, then you've got to get over that, because suddenly it's about you and what you can accomplish. And that's why where these mindsets come in. So that gets to the second part of what you were talking about, is how we price what we do. The problem is we have these mindsets that come after us. And I call them the bad next door neighbor to our expertise that's all in our heads, right? So it's mindset of inadequacy. I'm just not good enough. Or the mindset of comparison. I wish I could be as good as Robin is. You know, I'm never going to be as polished as Robin. Or the imposter syndrome. There's a big one.
Yeah, it is. I heard about that one quite a bit.
Yeah, haven't we all, right? And with this little voice in our head that says, somebody's going to just find out about that I'm not good enough. You know, it's just a matter of time. The mindset of helping. I just want to help everyone. Well, you know what? That's not a business. That's a charity. That's not a business. So we have these mindsets that hold us back. And what my big, hairy, audacious idea about all this is, Robin, is that to get out of our heads, we've got to get into the heads of our clients and understand their hopes, wants, dreams, desires, anxieties, fears, understand what they are and lean into that. And what we will find is, as we go along, is that our clients see more value in us than we see ourselves. And if we internalize that idea and price to the value clients see, it will improve everything in our business, including our pricing.
So it's interesting you talk about this. It sounds like it's an internal struggle for most of us, debating these thoughts and ideas from an imposter syndrome to self-worth to doubting ourselves. And I think it's a combination of things. Correct me if I'm wrong, John. It's fresh in my mind because I just left in the fall here. It becomes more of a, I'm going through a lot of changes. I just left a corporate career. I got to start a brand new one. And being an entrepreneur on my own, deciding what to do and how to do it. And, you know, you had staff for everything that you do. And now you have to take control of that and you have to do it yourself. And on top of that, you're being asked to price things. And the product is you. There's no other product. You're selling you yourself as the product. To productize yourself from a business sense, how do you frame that?
Well, the way to frame that is to get out of that. Get out, just
step abandon. Back and take a look from the outside in?
Step back and understand whose opinion of value matters most. Is it mine of myself? Or is it the client that's writing the check to me to in order to get transformation that's important to them in their lives, not just their business life, but their personal life? I mean, whose value matters? In other words, I heard one person express it quite well. Get your head out of the client's wallet. It's not about you. It's about them. And that's a good thing, because what happens is when we have conversations with clients and understand what their needs, anxieties, fears, wants are, what we begin to see, and they begin to see in us as we have those conversations, and these have to be good conversations and with follow-up questions about where they see value and how they and what the outcomes are that they are looking for and the value of the transformation that we bring to them. And once that gets put up on the table, then a client has more trust, they have more clarity, they see greater value in you, and sometimes more than you see in yourself. And that's what I mean by getting out of our own heads and getting into others. I call it, the reason my book is titled The Generosity Mindset, it's not about giving everything away. It's about getting out of your own head and generously making space for others and learning where they see value.
Yeah, that's one of the topics I want to dig into it and during the conversation that we're having here, John, is your book, The Generosity Mindset. I've got that on my list. But before I get that there, was there a specific moment? I just want to get into what you've experienced. Was there a specific moment, a client conversation or a deal that you realized the pricing and value problem was the most professionals are carrying around? Is value problem versus the real problem, which is the people are struggling with right now?
For me personally?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You went through this?
Oh, yeah.
You're smiling.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and I'm just thinking, you know, you talked about t-shirts in the drawer. Have I got t-shirts? I could pull out all sorts of t-shirts. Let me give just one.
Yep.
Where I got really irritated with a client. You might even say angry with a client. And it was about their demands on me and for what they were paying. And once I came to a more lucid moment, what I realized, in a more honest moment, what I realized is that my irritation shouldn't be with that client. My irritation should be with me because I was the one that quoted the price. They accepted it. It's not their fault. And it's not their fault that they stepped all over boundaries and I allowed scope creep. It's not their fault. It's my fault. And what it ended up with is a client that we parted ways and we should have because I wasn't serving them the way I should have served them, just to be frank about that. And they needed to go someplace where they could get better service than I was able to give them. The point of this is that when we examine some of these situations, the problem is us and where we haven't done the work ahead of time to understand where the client sees value and whether we're the best fit for them. And so that moment was a seminal one for me to understand that not only have I got this problem myself in living color, but a lot of my clients had the same one. And so that's what really ignited my passion about getting to the bottom of this issue and devoting my practice toward it.
Now, so was that part of the learning process early on, or does it happen time to time, at what stage did this take place? Because I've seen that with me in the first couple of deals I did. Maybe I did not define the scope correctly. Maybe I didn't frame the deal correctly. I chalked it up to a learning process. I'll fix it the next time. Mm-hmm. Does this happen often, or is it at the early stage, John?
Well, I think it's a lifetime thing.
A learning process.
Yeah, it's a lifetime learning process, and here's why. And by the way, it's why I call my podcast The Price and Value Journey. It's a journey. It's a journey toward a destination you never quite get to. And here's why. It's not because I know the answer and won't tell you. It's because our clients, their values are changing all the time. And it is a constant search and journey and conversation that we have with our clients to understand where they see value. And so this is, let's take the pandemic as a great example. How in just a one fell swoop, at the end of March, beginning of April 2020, everyone's values changed dramatically. And so if you didn't understand that and you didn't lean into that and understand where clients saw value, then your business not only atrophied, it may have died. The point is, that's an extreme example, but this is happening all the time where business owners, things are happening in their lives that we know nothing about and their values are changing. And so it's up to us to keep up with that. And so that's why it's something it's a lifetime thing. Yes, earlier on, it's much more difficult because you've got to wrap your head around understanding where value originates and how that originates in the client. And over time, you develop a muscle for this, you know, a capacity for this. And you get better at it, but it's a lifetime thing.
Absolutely. And for the audience, what John is talking about is like riding a bike, basically. You got to get trained first. You fall a couple of times, but then you get used to it. But the problem is you got to get up and start again and try it again. Don't give up on it. And don't give up on what you've set out to do. Because, and again, that's another one too, that most people who operate solo, alone, independent, they run into. Basically, if they have a bad experience, they sort of shy away from trying again. So they have to develop their own confidence, their own fortitude to get up and go and try it again every day. They don't have a team supporting them around yet. That's what it is. Now, let's talk a little bit, John, if you don't mind, about the North Fulton. Where's North Fulton?
Atlanta. So, yeah, the north side
you're
of Atlanta.
Just over Atlanta, right?
Right.
I've got a lot of global audience. They wouldn't know where North Fulton is, so I wanted to make sure that we frame that. Yeah. And there's a business radio there. There's about 780 shows on it. You've done probably 1,200 guests. Am I getting this correct? Based on what I'm seeing here, maybe no. Maybe the numbers are off, but you're active on this one. And you've been on both sides of the mic for a long time. So talk to me a little bit about running a podcast operation at scale, because it sounds like it's at scale. And what does it teach you about business relationships?
Yeah, what a great question. So I think the issue with a podcast is understanding that it is about relationships, that it is not, a podcast is not about broadcasting me.
100%.
When I, and thank goodness that's the case, because when I go back and listen to my first episode, I'm just mortified. But it's out there, Robin, but I'm not going to tell you how to find it, okay?
No. I'm just remembering my own first podcast. Crazy.
But it is not about your, smooth, dulcet tones. It's not about your content. Please spare us. Nobody is waiting. Nobody was waiting for John Ray to turn on the mic. It's about the relationships you create by doing this work. That's what it's about. And so, yeah, I've done probably about 13 or so hundred episodes, podcast episodes, gosh, number of guests. I'd have to sit and think about, but the point is that those are relationships that have a deeper basis to them than a lot of the ways that we can create relationships. And I think if you look at a podcast that way, it's something that will cause you to want to keep doing it maybe as long as I have, which now is coming up on 10 years. I do it because I can be of service to others. I can celebrate them and their work. And I get to meet great people like you, Robin. And,
thank you, John.
You know, I
thank
get, you. Yeah, absolutely. And I learn from the shows that I host and the shows that I guest on, both. And so it's a remarkable medium. And I think every expert service provider ought to have a podcast, but they ought to do it in service to deepening relationships that help them ultimately build their business.
You know, I'm always reminded how the idea came to me to start a podcast. I wasn't aware that you would use a podcast for any reason other than just talk or tell a story of sort or bring some information to somebody that otherwise they wouldn't have it. So before the, just a little in parentheses, a story for you, John, before the pandemic, I'm very well known, and you probably did the same thing too. You were going out and having coffees with people all day, having lunches, business lunches, dinners, etc. And it was a great way to connect with people. It was phenomenal, face-to-face. You can't replace that. And then we go through the pandemic, and understandably so, everybody goes behind a mic, camera and a mic, and we had to communicate with each other that way, which is okay. The pandemic passes. People got lazy, and I'm sorry to say that. And when you tell people, hey, I want to meet you face-to-face, they create a ton of excuses. They don't want to meet face-to-face. A, they don't want to meet face-to-face, maybe because of energy. The second thing is probably they moved out of town, and they're now living 4 or 5 hours from a center of the city where you possibly could meet. I remember driving somewhere where I used to meet this person in the city. I had to drive like 3-4 hours up in the farmland somewhere to meet at a diner because we were used to meet in the city and they moved away. So the idea came and said, okay, well, why don't we have like over camera kind of coffee chats? And I created a calendar event. I called it Coffee with Robin, and people would just come in and have a coffee with me online. Then I thought, well, why don't we record these calls? And that's how I got started. That's why when I go back 2.5 years and look at the first podcast that I recorded, how silly I sounded, it's crazy. But I improved.
Absolutely. Well, we all think we sound silly, but the truth of the matter is the people that listen to us think we're just fine. So that's the thing. We have to, here's another place where you have to get out of our own heads and listen to what other people say.
Absolutely. Now let's talk a little bit about the Generosity Mindset, the book that you've authored. So from my perspective, when I look at the name, I'm not just being for me here, for others as well. makes more people like raise an eyebrow, right? So every time they hear the word generosity, they think, I hope it's not a pricing book, that's a self-help book. And how do you address that reaction? How do you address the reaction between the two of them?
Yeah, it's a counterintuitive thought, right? So it's one that I get that a lot from people particularly when they read the subtitle. You know, it's a journey to business success by raising your confidence, value, and prices. And so that's where the counterintuitive piece of it is. And I think the problem is that we've narrowed this idea of generosity down to how much we are giving to a worthy cause. Or maybe some listeners might think of generosity a little more broadly in terms of, you know, how supportive you are, kind you are, or something like that. And what I'm arguing for is that generosity is really about taking ourselves back to really ancient wisdom. I mean, and not just the golden rule, but the platinum rule, you know, not just do unto others as you would have them do to you, but do unto others as they would like to be done too. You know, that's the platinum rule. And so understand where others' needs, hopes, wants, desires are, and live into that is a universal idea that is in many ancient traditions and in many more modern business thinkers. Dale Carnegie is one that comes to mind. Bob Berg, a hero of mine with the Go Giver series of books.
Yeah, I've got the book.
A marvelous man and a marvelous series of books. So this is a timeless principle. And all that I have done in this book is take that timeless principle and apply it to a professional services practice for solopreneurs and small professional services firms that are selling their expertise, and applying this principle and how it works in terms of positioning, business development, pricing, having conversations with clients. And that's really what I've done.
So I don't know if you agree with this, but there is a version of generous, quote unquote generous, that looks like always saying yes. We're always saying yes, always taking on one more client, always doing a bit more at no extra charge here and there. How do you distinguish this type of generosity we're talking about from a pattern? The book talks about generosity in a different pattern. Here we have a pattern of maybe I want to call it extreme generosity that probably somebody needs to rate it in, put some guardrails around it.
Yeah. In my book, I call it the mindset of helping. This is actually a mindset that holds us back. This seems generous, like you say, Robin, but it's not. It's actually shortchanging not just us, but others. I mean, number one, we are not built to serve everyone. And I cringe when I hear someone in their description of their business say, I'm just here to help everyone. Well, no, you're not. I mean,
let's be honest.
You're not a fit for everyone.
That's right.
And you can't solve everyone's problems. And so let's get beyond that. The other thing too is that it is not good for the client for you to take that tact and then take on clients that you really can't serve. That's not really helping people. That's actually hindering them. So again, like you say, Robin, let's be honest about this with ourselves. And then the other thing is you have got to have a sustainable business. You've got to be around in order to help people. So it's like, if you're not pricing adequately for your best fit clients, you're not going to be in business. It's just that simple, right? You're going to burn out. You're going to cut corners. You're going to do something that puts you on the sidelines. And that is not where you want to end up.
Plus the physical toll, right, John? The physical toll, probably, right?
Physical and mental toll. You just cannot keep that up. And yes, we come out of the shoot very eager and thinking that we can do a lot and conquer a lot, but it's about sustainability. And it's about being able to be a constant presence over a long period of time. That's what our clients are paying us for, to be there for them. So that's where the mindset of helping really holds us back, and how it's not generous at all. In fact, it's ungenerous.
And you mentioned something that really struck me when I was doing a bit of a reading on your background and the book itself. You mentioned there's something called when you price something too low, it signals inferiority to the market. That word struck me differently because I've seen it before. And again, because we feel like, oh, it's easy. I mean, I've done this for 25 years. I should be able to snap a finger and get it done. But to somebody else, maybe it's much more valuable than we think it is. And pricing it low, you're right, it sends a signal of inferiority to the market. Can you elaborate on this one, John?
Yeah, for sure. Price is a marketing signal. In and of itself is a marketing signal. It's a signal of quality. It's a signal of inferiority. So let me give you a real life example here. I'm in Alpharetta, north of Atlanta. And the other day, not long ago, I passed a stand that had a sign that said 20 ribeyes for $40. So a guy with a truck selling ribeye steaks, 20 for $40. Now, what's the first thing that comes to your mind when you see that sign? There's something wrong. Everyone knows that you can't get a decent ribeye for $2. So, you know, he's signaling inferiority when he puts a sign out like that. And so the point is, that's an extreme example, but the point is that when we think, if we don't price adequately, what happens is that clients make judgments about the quality of what we're able to do before we even get to get in the ballroom of their minds to talk about how we're going to serve them. That's why I'm a real objector to this idea that I've got a discount because I'm new, or I'm a professional service provider and I'm going to run a Black Friday sale, or some of these things that people come up with because, you know, they come up with them, and I understand why. They want to have more clients and they want to make something happen. And this is not the way to make something happen. So that's part of the problem with price, using price as a bad marketing signal.
It does send a bad marketing signal. It does send the undervalue signal. Now, speaking of value, so let's talk a little bit about the value conversation that you mentioned earlier in the discussion here, that we need to revisit that value conversation with our customers. For a lot of fractional executives and consultants, that conversation feels a little bit like selling. And I'm not sure if everybody out there is built for selling. Now, when you become an entrepreneur, independent consultant, you need to sell. And then basically you need to relearn that skill. But they try to escape it here and there kind of thing, just to don't want to sound like overselling it. But how do you help them reframe it to something else?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked this question. I am delighted to talk about this one because there are so many people, my people, if you're an introvert and you are scared to death of being too salesy, you're one of my people. Okay. And let me tell you how to get around this. The way to get around this is it's not about sales. It's about serving. And how do you serve people? You just ask questions. Guess who's the most prepared to ask questions and listen? Introverts, right? You don't have to come in to a conversation like that with the backslapping, storytelling, high-fiving kind of vibe where you're doing all the talking. That's salesy, but it's not serving. The point is, it's about service. It's about understanding what a client needs, asking the questions that get to that and where they see value. And hey, if that leads to where I can help you as a provider, then let's talk about that. But if I can't help you and we've uncovered issues that where we realize I'm not the fit for you, let me help you find someone that is. See, it's about service. And if you frame your conversations around, I just want to learn about you and be curious, it changes everything.
You know, about, I don't know how many decades ago, I had a sales training with, I think it was IBM who actually authored this one. And a sales coach came in and gave me a training on it. And I was working for a large telecom company. And that's exactly what this particular course training was talking about, is have a conversation for people. Keep in mind that you're not desperate. And this is where, when desperation hits, this is the only opportunity, or this is the only client, or this is the only piece of business that probably going to get for the next 6 months, and desperation hits. And then you start making mistakes. I was taught from when I was younger age, you would have a conversation with somebody and you may not be the solution for them, but having that conversation and understanding what they want, now you'd be able to probably recommend, connect, you become an advisor, which that's the value you bring in. You become an advisor. You may not be able to deliver what they're looking for, but you probably through the conversation could conclude or could find out that perhaps what they're looking for is somebody that you know that you can bring to the table to help them, to support them. Not always you are going to be able to do the sale in this one, but I've seen it many times when you have one or two opportunities, your entire year relies on those one or two opportunities. You know, it's like ping pong ball, you know, bouncing off the walls, and you're trying to close these two things and you end up messing up the two of them. In a lot of cases, take a deep breath. That's what somebody told me the other day on a podcast. Take a deep breath, chill out.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, here's the thing. When you really genuinely want to serve people and you genuinely want to understand them and get to know them, here's the other little magic thing. You stand out. You stand out. You stand out as a professional of value. And just like you said, I love the way you said that, Robin. People will turn to you for in their most trying moments of life. I got a call here recently from a lady who's never been a client of mine. And she just called to say her daughter's going through a terrible divorce. She wanted a recommendation for a divorce attorney. She says, John, you're the one person I trust to give me a great recommendation. Well, I don't know anything about divorce attorneys. I mean, I know plenty of them. I know good ones, but I don't know anything about all the, you know, the ins and outs of how that ought to work, but I could recommend some. And she trusted me. And when you develop a reputation for being of service first, of service that may or may not benefit you, when that's your reputation, it will come back to you. And the great thing about the way the universe works is the universe rewards you for that. And the fun part of life,
it's called the boomerang effect.
That boomerang, it happens, and it happens in very unique ways that you can never imagine. And that's the fun of life.
I know. You know, and you bring a very valid point, because a lot, if I look back and as you were talking, John, I was thinking back throughout all the conversation that I've had and the relationship that I've had in my life, and you sort of scan through that. And a few people stands out in your track since the beginning. And those people who are still close to me, good friends, the conversation started at an advisory conversation. I wasn't selling. I wasn't doing any hard pitches to anybody. I was just trying to get to know the individuals. There are some people who are long retired. And I remember starting the conversation by being interested in their hobbies, whatever their hobbies was at the time. And still till today, there are a few of them out there that I'm a hobby photographer, so I'll go out and I take a few people out for teach them how to do photography. They're retired now, and I have no business interest in doing any transactions. But that genuine interest at a human basic level that you take in others has a huge effect. Where I try to teach, and you try to teach it, I see in your book, is to demystify that I have to have 20 calls a day. I got to knock on 200 doors. Oh my God, the skies. Like, I just can't take that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So much wisdom there, Robin. Thank you for that. Absolutely. And it's just such a more pleasant way to live, right? I mean, just to be of service and to reap the benefits of that over time. You don't serve because of any transactional way, but you serve knowing that the universe is going to reward that mindset. It does. It will. It happens all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of just leaning into that.
Absolutely. Now, just from the audience perspective, John, who's your customer at the end of the day? Who would benefit from this conversation that we're having today here?
Yeah, so my clients are the people that I think my work resonates with are those that are selling their expertise, that they realize they've got mindsets that hold them back. And a lot of them have pricing problems, and some of them don't even know it. It's why I talk about in my book, the red flags.
Or they become numb to it, John. They become numb to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They've dealt with it for so long that they think it's part of doing business, and it's not. If you're working too hard for too little money, you've probably got a pricing problem.
And you need to talk to John, basically.
Well, yeah, or read my book or do something, but understand that it is a pricing problem, and having more clients is not going to help you. In fact, it's going to burn you out even faster. If you're accepting all clients that come your way, mm-hmm. I mean, we're all pleasers, right? We all want to be accepted, but the problem is that we are not great fits for every client that comes our way. So if you're accepting every client that comes your way, you've probably got a pricing problem. You probably have a boundary problem too. So folks that struggle with these things are the people that I work with. And a lot of them have been in business for several years and they've plateaued, and they plateaued and they're frustrated, and it's too late to go back to corporate. So they got to make this work, and they realize they've got to make a change. Those are the people that I generally work with.
So we're hoping that whoever's listening to this podcast today, and I know the followers of this channel, are you used to me saying this, but I'm just going to reiterate it one more time on this podcast. If you need to get a hold of John Ray, he's connected with me now on LinkedIn. I just sent you a connection request, John, if you don't mind, if it's okay with you accepting it. And if you can't reach John Ray directly, feel free to reach out to me and I'll be happy to facilitate an introduction. That's my job. That's what I do. And at the same time, I highly encourage you to do some soul searching after this conversation and figure out if you are indeed in the phase of your career where you're supposed to be on every level, on the pricing side, on what you're delivering to your customers, on the type of customers you're attracting. Indeed, after this conversation with John today, me, for myself, I am revising a lot of ideas in my mind after this conversation right now. So I'll be implementing a few changes after this podcast, that's for sure. Now, I encourage highly everybody out there who's listening to this to learn from it. Go buy the book, The Generosity Mindset. It is a best-selling book out there. And John, by the way, there is another book coming. It's called The Workbook. Mm-hmm. And yeah, what was missing from the first one? You had to do another one.
Well, there's some folks that want to do it themselves. And so I thought what would be for those folks that would like to, you know, kind of explore it themselves is to give them the book that I've released in a workbook version, where they can take some of the principles in the generosity mindset and go through and work it out. And like you say, Robin, you said it well, do some soul searching themselves.
Absolutely. So who is the reader you have in mind when you wrote the book? And is there a specific person you wrote it for? Or, you know, you just took some self-reflection and you said, okay, this might be helpful to others.
Well, I had a few people in mind when I was writing it for certain.
You probably used them as an example, but you didn't tell about it.
Yeah, I had a videographer, Maxwell, I'm thinking about you, who I wrote about in the introduction, and I didn't tell him it was him because I made it anonymous basically, but it was about a conversation that he and I had, and he was talking about all the pricing problems that he had, and I used that in the introduction, and when the book came out and he read the book, and I said, Maxwell, you know you're in the book. He says, really? He says, I thought that introduction kind of sounded like me. I said, yeah, it's you. So he said, thank you for putting me in. I really appreciate that. But yeah, people that are selling their expertise, you know, fractional executives, consultants, coaches, videographers, marketing executives, you know, fractional marketing executives, anyone that's selling their expertise, selling what's between their ears, I think could benefit from the book.
And have you had any feedback on the book? What was the feedback? So what is the most hitting comments you've heard back from the many readers that bought the book?
Well, I have been overwhelmed and blessed by the feedback I've gotten from the book. You know, I've had people tell me, I had one lady tell me the other day, she keeps it on her bedside table to read.
Isn't that wonderful when we hear people like they used the content that we created in a positive way?
Yeah.
It's uplifting, isn't it, John?
Yeah, it's very humbling, truly humbling. And it makes me glad I hired a great editor to help me make it as good as I could make it, because it shows you what's at stake when people are feel that way. And so I've had people say, I've underlined so much out of the book, you know, I need a fresh book, which I'm happy to send them. But yeah, I've had a lot of great reaction from it, and I'm really blessed by that.
Now, just for the listeners out there, for those who are independent entrepreneurs on their own, just if they're curious, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about this one, I think, and we'll wrap it up after this one, I guess. You use podcasting as your primary business development tool, because business development is on everybody's mind, right? And you coach other professionals to do the same. So what made you conclude this was the right way versus things like speaking engagements or LinkedIn lead generation or other referral networks? Obviously, I believe in podcasts. You believe in podcasting as well. And we talked a little bit about earlier. Speaking engagements, what do you think of that?
No, I think speaking engagements are great. You know, I think I think they are authority builders. I think the problem that you've got with the speaking engagement is it's kind of all about you in a lot of time, in a lot of cases. And you are, sometimes we want those speaking engagements because it's validation of us as opposed to an opportunity to develop relationships. See, if you can use the speaking engagement to develop relationships, then I'm all for it. So I speak at a lot of Rotary clubs, and I speak about service above self and why that's a great business model and why the generosity mindset fits into all that. And I've developed a lot of relationships out of that. And so I'm a big believer in speaking engagements, but here's the thing about podcasts is that a podcast creates something, a conversation that lasts for a long time, that's always out there for people to find. And it creates, even more important, a relationship between those two, three, some four, sometimes individuals that are on a podcast together that last as well. So I think when you use a mic to build relationships, mm-hmm. it's an extraordinary way to develop your business.
Absolutely. And it connects you with communities broader than the people that you're talking to on the podcast.
Right.
I didn't know when I started the podcast that I'm going to get 2 million views every 7 days on the podcast. I did not know that. I thought me, maybe my mom, perhaps if my face shows up on the TV as she's scrolling through YouTube, maybe she recognizes her son and listen. I don't know. But I wasn't hoping for much when I started, but it sort of creates itself and the momentum snowballs from there. Excuse me.
Yeah, it does.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Is that how you started, John?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, hey, there's an old B.B. King song. B.B. King, the great blues musician.
Yes, B.B. King.
Says, yeah, so he says, nobody loves me but my mother, and sometimes I think she's jiving too.
I love that.
When you start a podcast, that's what you're
thinking.
That's a
blues song for sure.
Absolutely. And so that's what you're thinking. And, you know, you it's scary to throw yourself out into the world when you first start. But the truth of the matter is you get so much more out of it than you can ever imagine when you do that. And I'm sure this has already happened to you, that you get people that come back to you, Robin, that say, what, something you said really changed things for me. And when you get that, it's powerful.
100%. And every conversation I learn from and every conversation that I have, it changes me a little bit. And if I wouldn't be here for all the conversations that I've had in the past in my life. And nobody would. I mean, when we stop learning, when we die, that's, somebody told me that a long time ago. We will always be learning from each other.
Absolutely.
So I want to just make sure that the, you know, give the audience a little bit of a tidbits here. One piece of wisdom from John's book, and I hope it resonates with people. The effectiveness of your pricing is constrained by your willingness to have the value conversation. We've talked about value earlier. And this is from John's book. So keep having those value conversations, keep articulating your value, and keep, in my opinion, and for me personally, I keep have to remind myself that I have a value, that I have a self-worth, and that has a money price tag on it. And it better be good, because I think I'm good. And so is you, and so is everybody else who's listening to this podcast who are in independent contractors out there. Also, one more wisdom from John's book. You need a certain number of clients who are saying no because you are too expensive. I love that one. I'm going to repeat it. You need a certain number of clients who are saying no because you are too expensive. Now, let that hit you a little bit. You can't take and win 100%. I used to manage big sales teams, and I can tell you this. If I see a sales funnel with 100% close rate, somebody's getting fired because they're not putting all the opportunities in. You need to have a close rate that is less than 100%, even in your business as an individual. Mm-hmm. I love those two quotes. They hit me, and I selected them, and I thought to share them with everybody. John, any comments?
Well, I'm just grateful you read my book, Robin. So thank you for that. Thank you for spending that time to make our conversation so meaningful. And yeah, I mean, you know, I think the again, we've got to get out of this mindset that we can serve everyone. And that's what happens when you accept 100% of the clients that come to you. There's a certain amount of people that are simply cheapskates. And that's true for every good and service. It's true for every buyer. So there are some things that just, there are buyers that don't value what we do. And we have to understand that and move on and go someplace else to those that do.
The world is big. It's not constrained to two customers that you couldn't, or potential customers you couldn't do business with.
Absolutely.
John, I want to thank you for spending the time with me today. I really appreciate it. We've been recording for 55, 56 minutes. It feels like 2 minutes. I could talk to you for many hours. The conversation is so fluid and so easy. So thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you. I'm so grateful for you, Robin.
Same here.
Just congratulations on the great work you're doing. I really admire what you're doing and how you're helping folks. So thank you for that.
Same to you, John. I admire what you do as well. The podcast, the book, helping people with those wonderful pieces of wisdom from your book. I encourage everybody to check out John Ray's LinkedIn profile, which has all the details there. There's the book. There's how do you get a hold of him. There's the many initiatives also that he's involved in. It'd be very interesting to take a look at John's LinkedIn profile. If you can't find John, maybe there are many John Rays out there. I don't know. But if you can't find John, you know me. So connect with me. I'll facilitate an introduction. No issue at all. And John, I do run a networking event. It happens on Fridays at 9 a.m. in the morning. Not this Friday because of Good Friday, but next Friday, April 8th. You're welcome to join and do like a 30-minute presentation to, because they're all independent, small entrepreneurs, about a 15, 20 people network. If you're interested and if you'd be willing to give your wisdom for 20 minutes, we'll be happy to have you as a guest.
How can I say no to Robin?
That's appreciate it.
So thank you so much. What a gracious invitation. I would love to do that. And I look forward to figuring out when we can.
Absolutely. No problem. So for the audience, thank you so much for joining me on this journey of recording episode 199 or 98 now. Don't quote me on this one. So don't come back to me, Robin, you missed it by one. I'll correct it. But anyway, thanks so much for joining us. If you're coming on YouTube, thanks for watching us. If you're coming on the podcast, thanks for listening in. I hear people take us to the gym. Enjoy your gym workout while you listen to us. That's no problem. And if you're reading the blog post, which we produce on every episode, just to summarize our conversations, please feel free to check out the podcast. If you don't want to spend an hour listening, you're probably more at ease, you know, reading a 2-3 minute summary of the conversation. Also, you can head out to robinayoub.blog and check it out. Thanks from John Ray and myself, and I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks so much, everyone.